Hello, welcome to the George Washington Podcast, and today we went a little long, so after the theme music, we'll just get right to it. Today we've got Richard P. speaking on the Grammys, a very topical subject, award show that happened several months ago, as well as a review of Windrose and Vampire Weekend's new album. And then after that, I brought back Jordan F., a fan favorite, under short notice to speak on the Toronto Maple Leafs and just how disappointing they are all the time. Spirals everywhere. Spirals of depression. Spirals of greatness, of just endurance, just all sorts of spirals spiraling around. It's like season one of True Detective. Okay, let's get to it. Are you okay with Richard today?
Yeah, that works today.
Okay, yeah, I think it's more apt to go with just old school Richard today.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Indeed.
It's an old standby.
Indeed. Okay, so let's begin with something very topical. The 66th Annual Grammy Awards.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did you want me to give everyone a rundown, or you in particular?
Probably better if you do it.
Okay. Yeah. So these awards that go to some of the biggest and brightest stars in the music industry is hosted by Trevor Noah. You know him, the guy?
Yeah,
the humorous guy. Yeah. It was at Crypto.com Arena. They're still keeping the name of Crypto.com. That's cool. Good for them. In Los Angeles. This was February the 4th, so a few months ago now, but still relevant, I feel. And the four big categories, we had Taylor Swift's Midnight. You listen to that?
I haven't.
Yeah, okay, fair. It won Album of the Year. It seemed like it was Taylor Swift's year, but really, what year isn't Taylor Swift's?
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah, right. Miley Cyrus won Record of the Year for Flowers. You know that one,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. That was all over the radio based on my Uber driving. Not me driving, me being in Ubers. I heard it all the time. Billie Eilish and Phineas won for Song of the Year for What Was I Made For from the Barbie soundtrack. And Victoria Monet, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, took home Best New Artist. We had some new categories, African music performance. African music has been really coming up into the modern Western culture recently. Alternative jazz album. That's cool. Like, I don't know what's the difference between normal jazz and alternative jazz, but I mean, that's my problem. That's a me problem, not alternative jazz problem. Jazz's problem. Best Pop Dance Recording was also added, and there are 94 categories in total. And this was one of the most watched Grammy Awards since 2020, I guess, which I think would make it one of the most watched in the last 20 years or so. Don't fact check me on that. 16.9 million Americans watch it, according to Nielsen. And of course, we don't have the more granular data because we don't have a Nielsen account. Yeah, you need a corporate account for that. But the reason why it was very popular and very much watched was in part because of all the crazy controversies that took place. And I only heard about these in researching this because, full disclosure, I did not watch the Grammy Awards. I do not watch award ceremonies in general. I don't really enjoy watching other people sit in a banquet hall and get awards. It's not really my thing.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, to each their own. Okay. So let's start with Killer Mike. Killer Mike won 3 Grammy Awards. Congratulations to him. But he also won something else. He won being taken into custody by the police and being taken away in handcuffs. Do you know why that happened?
I don't. I don't know anything about this, actually.
Yeah, okay. Well, how do you feel about
this? I know of Killer Mike. I do know Killer Mike, though. And he's given some pretty fucking based speeches before on the television.
Right, exactly. He is a rapper in his own right, and he is also one half of Run the Jewels. Or am I'm getting that right? Yeah.
I think so.
Run the Jewels. Okay, yeah, that's right. Yeah. How would you feel if you got arrested after winning 3 awards at the Grammys? It's a little awkward.
I mean, it makes for a pretty badass press release.
That's
like,
true. Yeah.
You know, I won so many awards, they had to cuff me.
It's probably going to end up in a verse of his very soon.
What did he get arrested for, though?
I have no idea. Let me check. Okay, let's continue. Celine Dion made a rare appearance to present Album of the Year Award. Of course, she has stiff man's syndrome.
Yeah, unfortunate.
And the controversy here was that she gave it to Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift, as priorly mentioned, award. And apparently Taylor Swift did not hug her or did not acknowledge her during her speech, and this was a big deal.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, I don't know these people personally, but my charitable interpretation of it is that when you're going up to accept something like that and all the shit that's going on in your head and you're probably really excited or nervous or whatever, it's probably pretty easy to accidentally maybe like forget your manners in a moment with a certain person or a specific someone. You know, we've all had those days where if I go to work and someone asks me, "Oh, how was your weekend?" And I'll just say, "It was good." But I won't ask them how their weekend was.
Right.
And then they kind of feel a little bit butthurt about it. But, like, let's be honest. Did they really care how my weekend was?
No.
You know?
No.
But,
Let me just tell you, they didn't care.
I just have a really strong feeling that there's no ill will between Celine Dion and Taylor Swift. I mean, why would they hate each other?
Exactly.
Like, I've never... They probably met maybe like 6 times and like shared some small talk.
Right.
Be like, "Oh man, you know, that I love that song that you sang for Titanic. That was amazing.
Like,
loved it." You know, and like that's the end of this conversation. You know, like it's just they're two completely different people and with different circles and generations. So I really don't. I don't know. That's the thing about these award shows, though. It's just manufactured. drama.
I, by the way, Michael Render, Killer Mike, was arrested on misdemeanor charge for battery or something. Yeah, misdemeanor battery. That was the charge, and he's confident he will beat the charges.
How do you misdemeanor a battery? Like, was it an Energizer?
Woo! Let's go!
That's where I'm at right now.
And that's enough of that. Yeah, that's strange, though, about Celine Dion. Like, they're both grown-ass women. Why would it? They make different types of music. And why would Taylor Swift be indebted to Celine Dion? That's absurd. It's like saying that, like Phoebe Bridgers, who won the most awards at the 66th annual Grammy Awards, would say that she is inspired by Celine Dion. It would just come off as insincere.
Yeah.
Okay. So next controversy that we have here, Jay-Z's win of the Dr. Dre Global Impact Award, which I don't even think that's a real award, but here it is. Whoever wrote this said in their article, I'll leave a link, it should have been a moment of celebration, but the rapper used his acceptance speech as a platform to call out the Recording Academy for overlooking his wife, Beyonce. Wow.
Yep.
How could he besmirch the great name of the Dr. Dre Global Impact Award? That's a shame. Shameful.
Yeah. All for the woman he cheated on.
Oh.
Oh. See, I did a little bit of research.
That's right.
I know my stuff.
Yeah, damn. Yeah. And then finally, Travis Scott returned to the Grammy stage after that tragedy at the Astroworld Festival. And
oh my God,
he started throwing chairs and props and yelling about how he lost 10 nominations.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have much to say about that, but I don't want to be in Travis Scott's bad name. He seems pretty volatile, so...
He might come to your apartment and trash the place.
Yeah, that's right. Just throwing chairs around. Okay.
He's going to nominate you to be his next victim.
That's right. Yeah. He's going to bring in all of his fans and just make the apartment impossible to be in. We'll choke and... Okay, I shouldn't make jokes about this. This is wrong. Okay. But the meta question, yes, the question above all of this is more about what relevance really do these award shows have? How do you feel about that?
I mean, they have relevance culturally and whatnot. Like, it's obvious. I mean, there's a lot of influence in the arts, and whether it's movies or music or books or whatever, right? But this whole notion, I think, of these award ceremonies, it's just really unnecessary and self-congratulatory almost.
Right.
And you know, it really speaks to, like, I think it's very evident with that whole Jay-Z Beyonce thing, because it's just like, okay, yeah, she's a great artist. She's definitely recognized. You're both billionaires, so, like, don't act like you are being snubbed out of anything in your careers necessarily. Like, you're killing it. These rewards are meaningless. Music is subjective to begin with. The whole thing is dumb, to assign an award over someone else. Like, it might be fun to do and stuff, and I don't know. It just doesn't seem relevant, in the fact that people invest themselves so heavily into these controversies related around these award shows, and because every single year it's always a different controversy, because you have winners and you have losers. Only one person can win whatever award it is for any specific topic.
I agree. I believe that the Grammys are I guess any showcase or any accolade that you get from your peers has a special resonance to it.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, so, repeat that.
That anything that you an accolade you get from your peers is just has a special resonance to it because it means that the people that you work in the same field with recognize your value in what you're doing, I would say. But at the same token, I do think that a lot of this is manufactured. But I would also say that, I mean, they televise it, and the controversy helps to fuel not only viewers, but the Grammys are a great driver for, well, traditionally they used to be a driver for music sales, like recording sales.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know, compare it to your own workplace, you know, like the most generic thing, what, you get employee of the month, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I think because the fact that they have a ceremony and all this media coverage and it's so grandiose and it's just such a spectacle, that feeds into the importance of it.
But okay, I'm sorry. Sorry to cut you off. Sorry to cut you off.
Go ahead.
But it's like, yes, it is like winning Employee of the Month. But it would also be like if someone else won, or if you won, and then someone else came up and was like, actually, you know what? Everyone knows I should have won. Or you say that. Or you say, actually, everyone knows that Janice should have won. This is a farce.
Oh, Janice.
Yeah. And then everyone gets up and starts
for
clapping.
Janice.
Yeah. Yeah, Janice. Woo. So do you think you'll be watching award shows in the future? Or just keeping abreast of them?
You know, I'm going to say no, but I'm going to end up seeing some clips and portions of it in the future for sure.
Right.
But the whole act of me staying up on a Sunday night just to watch that, it's just not my thing. It never really has been. I've watched maybe a third total runtime kind of this most recent Grammys because my dad was very adamant that I see some of it.
Right.
He's a big fan of Miley Cyrus for some reason all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And I mean, she's got a good voice.
She
I mean, she did a
pretty talented,
great rendition of what was that song?
Give Me More by Britney Spears. No, it's not.
Was it that?
It's I can't remember, but I'll check. Continue speaking.
Anyway, yeah, so we watched it, and so he wanted to show me some of the performances or whatever, and I was like, okay, whatever, right? I just got no skin in the game, and it's just I'm surprised they were that relevant this year, because I thought that sort of stuff is waning. I guess it's more for the Oscars that people are caring less and less, I guess, but, you know, these awards just have no real importance, and there's so much, it's just an opportunity for people to get on the soapbox and, you know, act as if they're something more than they are. And, you know, like, artists can be influential and whatnot, but they're not really like leaders, and they don't really have a say in like what goes on in the world.
Exactly.
Unless you're Kanye, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. She did cover Give Me More, but no, I was not, that was not the song. It was a more traditional song. I think it was a country song.
Yeah.
So what I find strange is that, although, let me finish my thought. What I find strange is that more modern artists care about the Grammys, because I'm used to people not even really caring that much because it used to be the domain of more older acts, and it would
yeah,
it would be that the younger acts would never get their recognition until they were kind of over in, like, at least youth culture. But now it seems like things have kind of sped up a bit, and people are getting their so-called flowers now as they are popular. Although, I don't know. What's her face? Billie Eilish? Is she really as popular as her heyday? I feel like she's like still recognized, but I think like her heyday has kind of passed. I guess even Taylor Swift.
I guess so. I don't know. Taylor Swift's pretty damn popular. Like,
that's true. I mean, like, she's more popular than ever, but I feel like it's just a maintenance of it. It's just like she's a unstoppable force.
Yeah.
Anyways, so
I'll never understand it, man.
Why? Why is that?
Just the whole Swift craze. Maybe it's just because I'm just not into her music, I guess, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I know people that in my life, and they're big fans. They're not Swifties or anything like that, but they like her music and stuff. And I always see her with that Jack Antonoff guy.
Yeah.
Who's like a pretty big time producer now. And I mean, I knew him back in the day when he was in the band Fun.
Right.
With, Nate Rue and that other guy. I don't know who cares about that other guy. But
sorry to the third. He's going to listen to this and be like, damn.
And then I know he had a band called Bleachers, which I wasn't a fan of, but I knew of it. And that was like the only actual musical act I knew that he performed in. And then he just like became this really influential producer that everybody wants to work with, and he's just like a complete behind the scenes guy. Like, everyone knows he's very famous and very successful, but he's not really someone that like takes the stage, so to speak, anymore. At least
I find that a lot of what so-called like indie rock people or people in the indie sphere, they end up writing for bigger stars, because I don't want to get too much into the weeds with this, but I think modern, let's say, pop music is more about a celebrity who also has music that people like to listen to, as opposed to like a musical artist that is popular. Not to say that they are talented, they may or may not be talented in different ways, just that it's like Taylor Swift is a celebrity first at this point, and it's just that her main profession is making music. That's just my personal opinion.
And, like, people are, like, weirdly obsessed with her. It's almost cultish vibes of, like, oh, no man is ever going to be good enough for her. And, like, they send, like hate and death threats and shit to people.
Yeah. I heard, did I told you this? Yeah, that we talked about this in the last episode, that Travis Kelce was called out by her fans for not being ripped enough. Even though he's a gigantic, pretty strong guy if he's playing in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to break up, and then he's just going to become the next, like, breakup song, because she needs more fuel for the machine that is her music career.
No, I think they're the real deal. They're staying together. You heard it here first, folks. Okay. Do you have anything else you'd like to add about this topic?
Not really. Yeah. No, it's a bit insufferable, I think, the whole thing.
Yeah.
But just, good on them for making the money.
Yeah. I think the thing is, like, what are the equivalents for different types of artists? There used to be like different award shows or different ways of ranking music. I mean, from getting a Rolling Stone thing to a good rating in Rolling Stone or Pitchfork or I don't know, like Metacritic or something. just oh, I I wonder what metrics different artists use, and in different spheres of influence, like rap. It seems like rappers really do care about the Grammys more and more when they didn't care at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's a form of prestige and recognition, so I guess they want that respect, right? So
yeah,
it's all about respect.
If I was a musician, all I'd want is Juno after Juno award. But that's just me.
Nothing like a Juno award.
There's nothing like it. Now, there's one group that will not be winning a Juno award. And it's not because they don't deserve one. It's just they cannot get one because you have to be Canadian to get one. And they are not Canadian. They are famously from New York, but they now live all over. But I think they have a home base in LA at this point, at least Ezra does. So this band, by the way, is Vampire Weekend, and they have a new album, mm-hmm. Only God Was Above Us, and it was released this month, April 5th, after singles Capricorn, Gen X Cops, Classical, and Mary Boone. It's what album is this? Fourth? Fifth? I think it's the fifth, right?
And they're self-titled. They had Contra, they had Modern Vampires of the City, and then they had, was it really that long in between?
Before it was
the
Father of the Bride.
Father of the Bride.
And now
this, Father of the Bride. Was Father of the Bride actually like that's like a 10-year gap almost.
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah, you're right. But, I've listened to it back to back only the past 2 days because I totally forgot that it was coming out this month.
Right.
And I hadn't listened to Mary Boone. I only listened to Capricorn and Gen X Cops before that.
Right.
It's good. It's not that memorable after the first listen, but it's definitely something that I think will grow on me. I'm liking the last track on it, actually, called Hope.
Right. I think it's their longest song ever. Well, it might. I think
is it?
Is. It might be, yeah. I think it is. I guess there's like all those Father of the Bride. I just know that there are some long songs there, but I think Hope is the longest song.
Yeah, I was really enjoying that. And the rest of it, it's hard to pick out what song is what because I'm just listening to it as an album from beginning to end and not paying attention to the track list. But yeah, I do think it's quite good, but it seems very safe compared to at least their last album. It just sounds like very old school Vampire Weekend almost. In some parts, for some songs.
Well, what I found... Okay, let me go through this. The one thing that I noticed... Not noticed, but remarked upon, I listened to it today. First two songs... first two songs are like a great back-to-back 1-2 punch, I would say. I think there are no bad songs... I would say one of my favorite songs, if I had to pick, I would say like The Surfer. For some reason, I get Beach Boy vibes from it,
mm-hmm.
even though it doesn't really sound like the Beach Boys. Connect is another song that I really do rate. It's a good song. It reminds me of Joe Jackson. Stepping Out, if you've ever heard that song. It just has that same vibe of New York nightlife. And I like how a lot of the songs go on diversions and they meander here and there. So it's not something that on first listen you would say, wow, this is amazing, because you need some time to soak it in. I'm not saying that it's like so amazingly deep, but it does have layers to it. And I think at the end of the day, that it's a, what they're doing now is like they've covered all the bases of what the band is, and now they're taking parts, pieces, and recontextualizing them. Because now they have their sound now. This is the first album they've made that expresses what their sound is. It's not trying to be revolutionary. It's trying to build upon and speak on their sound. And the last thing I'll say before I throw it back to you is that I feel like it's a very self-referential album. It's kind of about how they were, like the album title, Only God Was Above Us. It seems like it's about how they were in their heyday, and now that time is passing and they're looking back on it.
Okay. That's very in line with the theme of a lot of their songs and just music in general for them. It's very self-aware, kind of a callback to Step on their third album. That song was all about, I think for Ezra, at least as a songwriter, that like, you know, like the first album and the first set of music that they were making as a band, it, like, that's like their baby, and like he's never going to be able to go back to making music like that ever again.
Right.
Just because of just the way life works and time and everything, how it goes and things change for him.
And that's a theme that's followed up on with Connect. And like there are similarities to Connect and Step as well. So yeah, it's like there's a thread going through all of their albums, which I think it's cool that it rewards those who listen to the band. And that's one of the main things that I like about it. It makes you go back and listen to their other albums.
Yeah.
Except for Father of the Bride. Father of the Bride is just, it seems like, I think it's going to be like a very divisive album in the future to all the, what do you call them? The Vampire Weekend heads? What are they? The Vampies? Do they have the Vampy stands?
I don't think
they have a name for their fan base.
Not yet.
But yeah, according to our favorite website, Wikipedia, they say that Father of the Bride was basically a solo project for Ezra. So this is like their first album as an actual group since Modern Vampires.
Interesting. Okay. It's hard to recall because I don't remember much of Father of the Bride, to be honest, because I knew there were some songs that I did like on it and whatnot, and then they had that really small EP that came out in 2021, and there's literally a song called 2021, and its length is 20 minutes and 21 seconds and all that sort of shit.
Yeah.
But it's like, I like that because it was just kind of like an extended jazzy jam of some sort. And so, in retrospect, with what you just said, it that kind of makes sense and lines up in a way, because it does sound like it's something like a solo passion project almost, right? Where you just kind of really wanted to go off the rails and do something different.
And let me just add as well, though, that after he wrote the album, well, he did not write it himself. He had collaborators, but after they wrote the album, like the band did play together, they jammed together and played together for their concert tours, obviously. So it's not completely just a solo project. There was some collaboration, but just not in the way that...
For sure. I mean, it still has the name Vampire Weekend on it. If it was really solo, then he would use his name.
That's right. Exactly. You have anything else on this for now?
No, not really, but I'm really enjoying the album, and I'm looking forward to what my thoughts will be in maybe a month or something after it really kind of fits with me, and I listen to it a few more times.
Do you think you're going to go see them? They're playing Budweiser stage.
I'd like to. I've never seen them live. They're one of the few bands that I, bands that I've really, really liked over the years that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
Along with, another one, examples like Sufjan Stevens. I've never seen him live, but,
right.
I'd really like to, because I used to be a huge fan of his music.
Right.
If tickets are somewhat reasonable, I'll do it, but if it's, you know, 200 plus, I don't know. We'll see.
I was hope, like, I would, at this, I think I'd really like to see them, but I famously have a thing where I don't like going to outdoor concerts. The acoustics are not the best. So if they play like an indoor concert at like a hall, like an actual like concert, like a music theater, like a music hall, some sort of, that's what I wish I could have seen them earlier when they would play something like that. But I don't think logistically they would at this point. Unfortunately, but
that's interesting because I find the opposite. I find a lot of indoor concerts, the mixing is, I mean, especially if the mixing is not done right, it just sounds like,
yeah,
sounds
that's
terrible.
Right. That's right.
And then when it's outside, it's like you don't have to worry about that as much because you're not being bombarded by sound waves coming back at you from the back wall.
That's true. That's a good point. That's why you should always respect your in-house engineers and probably tip them.
They make a huge difference.
They make a huge difference, yeah. Okay, so you ready to move on? I think you're ready to move on. Because I'm excited about this next topic. Windrose? Ever heard of them?
Yes.
Windrose. I'm just going to say Windrose and let you just go at it. Go ahead.
Windrose is a dwarven metal band that I discovered last year. When I say dwarven, I'm not saying someone who is of the smaller size or smaller variety of human. A lot of people get that confused when I explain this band.
Honestly, you know, I did think,
they are,
I
like,
thought that for a
dwarf.
Bit as well. Yeah.
Gimli from Lord of the Rings.
Right.
He is a dwarf. All right. That is the type of dwarves we are talking about here. So basically this band, I believe they're from Italy. And
they are,
saw them, I saw them on Instagram or something. I just saw some kind of reel or whatever, and it was like one of their biggest songs, and it's about them like digging a hole or something, and it just seemed really silly and funny. I was like, oh my god, look at this, and then I like sent it to a couple friends or whatever. And then the algorithm came up on me again, and I was like, oh, okay, and then I like checked them out some more and listened to some of the music, and I was like, oh, this is pretty funny. It's pretty catchy, actually. And it kind of one of those songs that stuck in my head. And then I was like, I unironically like got them on my Apple Music subscription, got them downloaded, gave them one of the downloads. So I contributed, I don't know, like 5 cents towards their band.
Right.
And, I was like, you know what? I unironically like some of these songs now because they're just fun and it's just ridiculous. And I'm not much of a like metal person. But it was catchy and it seemed like really cool. And they put a lot of effort into their shows and all this sort of stuff. So then I found out they were touring North America and they're from Toronto. So I checked the price of the tickets. They're only like $46. So I was like, all right, let's do it. So I got a ticket and then a friend of mine from work, when I told him about it, he was on board immediately. He was like, this is straight up my alley. This sounds hilarious. I want to go. So he got a ticket.
Nice.
And then his girlfriend wanted to go too, so she started coming. And then my girlfriend wanted to come, and then it kind of spiraled out of control. And there was a bunch of other people that were interested, and so we had like a group of us, and we went.
But I would call that a virtuous cycle, a virtuous spiral. Yeah. That's a good spiral.
It was very good. And they performed well. I will say that it was clear that they were definitely using some backup tracks for, I don't know if it was for specific vocals or just like the songs in general and stuff like that. But it sounded like the lead singer had already blown out his voice after I don't know how many shows in North America. So he couldn't go too hard. But overall it sounded good, and there was a lot of like fun energy in it, and they all like cosplay when they're on stage. They've got like armor, like big pauldrons and like huge beards and like weird tunics with like kind of Viking Nordic looking like stitching and stuff on it. And like the songs themselves are, some of them are about Lord of the Rings. They reference, you know, like there's one song called The Battle of Five Armies, you know, which is a part of The Hobbit.
Yeah.
And there's other songs that there's one song called Drunken Dwarves, which is literally about drinking mead, and it's like it's a very high paced, high tempo song, and it's a lot of fun. And everyone there at the concert, a lot of metalheads and stuff, so it's a different theme. But everyone's very polite, and they definitely did a mosh pit, and they did their whole thing there, and that was really funny to watch, especially when they, at one point for one song, they all sat down on the ground and put their hands on the shoulders of the individual in front of them, as if they were like had multiple rows, and they were pretending to row as if they were a part of a boat or something. But they just had their hands on each other's shoulders and just like bending forward and backwards as they were like sitting on the ground. It was hilarious. It was really cool to see. The venue was the Masonic Temple in Toronto, which I'd never been to. It's actually a pretty nice venue. I liked it quite a bit. Yeah. And so we were up in the balcony and we were looking down and got a pretty good view of both the band and the crowd. And then I also decided to dress up as Frodo for this when I went to this concert, because it's just fitting, you know. I wanted to give into the hype. And there were a couple other people that were dressed up as various, you know, dwarves, or there were a couple gnomes there. There was some contention between the dwarves and the gnomes. I remember at the end of the concert, they were shouting at them. They're like, "No gnomes!" And they're like, "This guy's racist. He hates gnomes." Like, so, you know, it was a good night. It was a fun time. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I would say their performance was slightly better than I expected, because I was expecting some crazy, you know, like it's not going to be the best show I've ever seen. It was just something that was fun, you know, more importantly than anything. And, you know, I like what they're doing. I think it's a niche thing, and they do a good job of it, and it's, I'm glad that they're able to actually make a living off of doing this.
Do you think Windrose is more of what music needs? Or live music?
It's hard to say. There's a lot of music that I don't listen to, so I'm not really sure what it does need or doesn't need, you know? Because this band existed for years. They've made like 5 or 6 albums already, and I think they've been a thing since maybe 2018. I think the earliest album they released was, or something, but I thought that was pretty impressive. They've really pumped out a lot of music and done a lot. Maybe not 2018, it might have been 2015 or something, but it's still, they're relatively new compared to a lot of the other artists that I know.
So, well, they started in 2009, and I don't know when their first album came out.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Yeah. I would say, I should note that there's like the European metal scene is kind of this whole thing, just separate amongst itself. And it doesn't really get recognized unless you're really into metal. It's just like there are so many bands that are just fly under the radar and are only really popular or well known in Europe, so don't feel too bad that you didn't know about Windrose.
Yeah, I mean, it's a totally different scene in Europe with that stuff.
As opposed to, like, American metal, which is completely different.
I mean, these are waters that I'm not familiar with, right, for the most part. I mean, well, I used to listen to metal music when I was a teenager. Yeah. Like, I have been a fan, but I listen to mostly, like, Canadian metal bands, you know, like Alexis on Fire.
There you go. Yeah.
Protest the Hero, stuff like that, right? And in addition to all the punk that I grew up listening to and all that sort of stuff. So it was kind of like a natural extension to listen to some of that music and whatnot. But I had never really gone like so hardcore into it that I had, you know, tons of different metal bands. And, you know, usually they would have to have some sort of singing in it. I couldn't do just screamo. I could do like a mix and stuff like that.
Right.
Windrose isn't really the same as those kind of bands. They're very much, I don't know, it's something that you'd have to actually listen to, and you'd be like, wow, okay, you know, they've got something unique here. It's technically metal, sure, but it's more than that. It sounds like something that is like almost like the soundtrack for a movie or something, or like a video game, you know, like it's very canon to like a fantasy vibe.
Right. And this is why you call them dwarven metal. That's why, right? It's not because they are literal dwarves.
They are not.
No shade to dwarves, but it's more about that vibe, the Tolkien vibe, the cinematic epicness of the metal. So I got two final questions for you. One, what would you rate it out of, let's say, from, let's just go with a classic 1 to 10 scale.
I'd give them a 7.
Nice.
It was a good concert. They didn't dilly-dally. They weren't late to go on the stage. They didn't waste too much time. Like, there's certain bands and stuff like that, even ones I like, I feel like they might go on too long.
Yeah.
These guys didn't do that. The venue was good. I do wish that they did more on stage. They kind of just stood on these boxes above the crowd and then kind of just performed on those boxes. They weren't really moving around the stage. There wasn't a lot of physical energy.
Right.
That you see with other performances and stuff like that. A completely opposite example of this would be when I saw Glass Animals a few years ago at Massey Hall. There was one of the songs, I can't remember what the name of it was, but like the amount of energy that the lead singer just put into it was just like absolutely insane. And then by the time it was like a huge build up, and then when they got to like the drop, for lack of a better phrase, he just like, it's almost like his body completely collapsed. He was just so into it, and I adore that when I see that at a concert,
right,
that sort of stuff. I didn't see that with this band. It was very much like, oh, we have our music, we're coming to play here, this is our thing, here you guys go. Like, it felt almost transactional in a way, right? There wasn't the same passion with it. But the crowd was very passionate, though, and the crowd was great. Like, that was half of the spectacle of the whole thing. It was, everyone there was, like, hilarious. People were dressed up, and, you know, like, it was just a fun event to be a part of.
Cool. Okay. And my final question for you is, if Windrose ever came back to Toronto, do you think that it's a gnome-friendly space?
A gnome-friendly space?
Yeah.
I don't think they discourage the gnomes, but, I mean, some of their fans do. They hold some prejudice, so do that with what you will.
Damn. Just, wow. Okay. I will. Thank you very much, Richard. This has been very enlightening.
Yeah.
Jordy.
Yeah.
Jord out.
How's it going, DS?
Yeah.
Jord out.
Yeah. It's not. To be quite honest, it's not going very well. I'm calling you today because I'm hungover. I'm like a little depressed. It's I know you're not a Leafs fan, but did you watch the game?
I did. I watched it with fellow Leaf fans like yourself.
Yeah, it was a brutal thing to put your eyes upon. Let me just paint a little picture here. So the place that first, like, I tried watching it at home, but I think that I yell too much, and it's gonna eventually the neighbors are gonna start like having noise complaints. So I decided
you don't want to get evicted.
That's right, exactly. So I started going to the bar nearby, and then
yes,
but the bar nearby, they like it's packed, obviously.
But yeah.
Also, they play music in between the commercial, the action. Like during the commercials, they play music, and I just can't stand it because sometimes they miss it, and then they it's so irritating.
Yeah. Like I hear you.
Yeah, it's for like normal season games, it's fine. Like regular season, I'm okay with it. It's actually pretty cool. But like, or like a random 10 o'clock basketball game, who cares? But like during a playoff, it's just so irritating. So I went to this other place, tried to go a little bit further from where I live, just like out of the way, hoping that it'd be a little bit more chill, but like more fan emotion to it. I stood for like most of the game until the third period where people were like, yeah, this is over, and started leaving, and I got to sit down for a bit, but it was just tough. And
what was the establishment called?
Something about ready and set and something. Let me look it up. I have it, but I'll get into it further. But what did you think of the game, and how did you experience it? Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I watched the game with, first of all, I just want to say, even though I am not a Leafs fan, I hate the Bruins.
That makes sense.
So I was pulling for the Leafs in this series. But Boston is just such a better team than them right now. And I just think, I didn't think the Leafs would have a chance to win this series. Like, I thought they would have a chance, but I didn't think they would win the series to begin with. But it almost seems like they are, like, they seem, ironically, like they belong in junior.
Yeah.
And, they like, compared to this, and it's not because they don't have elite players, because all their players are elite, and I understand, look, it looked like Matthews is dealing with something. Nylander is clearly dealing with something. Who knows? Maybe even Marner's hurt. But honestly, after 82 regular season games, everybody's hurt. So if you're there, you're there. And it just seems like they, even though they have these star players, they just can't get it together and play as a team and play as a system in order to actually defeat an opponent. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It just seems like they're still trying to play a style of hockey that we all know doesn't work in the playoffs. And I personally, I know everyone, you know, yeah, obviously, look, Marner, I mean, he scored last night, but he's been invisible. Like I said, Nylander, Matthews, seems like they're dealing with something. But I personally blame the coach. And I just don't think he's the right coach for the job. And I just think he's getting out-coached again by another superior coach on the other side. And I also think he doesn't get the boys ready to play.
Yeah.
I think he just doesn't have it in him to get, like, really speak to them and tell them, like, what these moments really mean. And I think, like, it already feels like they're out of it, even though they still, like, it's a big hill to climb. But, you know, obviously, even though feels like they're out of it and they got like a 1% chance of winning the series, like, you still hope as a fan that they play their guts out in these last whatever how many games that they're going to have left here. But last night was unacceptable. That was a must-win game, and they didn't play like it.
Like, it's one
and you
thing
can't even
they,
really blame the goaltending because it was right, two power play goals.
Exactly.
And he played well, Samsonov. Yeah.
Like, he had that goal with the five holers, but, like, it wasn't his fault. They were terrible. Yeah. It was like people would be fine if they lost, but it was a competitive game, but it wasn't at all. There were like little glimmers, like single moments, but not really. Not at all. Like someone was saying that first they couldn't really get zone entries. And then someone, I can't remember who said it, but they said they switched to the strategy of just, instead of dump and chase, just dump. Like, no chase, just dump. Like, I don't know, like...
Little dump.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, it was just, it's very difficult to watch. Like, it just hurt, but the place was called Round the Horn. It's a baseball... pun or reference, I believe. Yeah, that. By the way, yeah. But it was just absolutely, just devastating. And I think also that the thing is that of the like competitors that the Leafs have had in the playoffs. The Bruins are not that good. They're not. It's just that they're coached properly and they run a system and they play the system. That's what makes them so much much better.
Yeah. Yeah, like I know a lot of people were happy that they avoided Florida, which cuz Florida looks like an absolute monster truck of a team right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they are making the Lightning look like a Lightning, who are also a really good team. They're making them look, horrible. And last night they lost Panthers, but they almost came back and they never gave up. They were always in it. You never felt like the game was over for the Panthers, even though they lost.
Yeah.
But last night I just felt like from the drop of the puck, from when JVR scored, and it's so like to add insult to injury.
That's right. Yeah.
A player who Leafs fans, Leafs for love, and a lot of people would have loved to see him stick around, but you can't because of cap issues. A big body, winger, power forward, goes to all the dirty areas. He scored a beautiful goal.
Yeah.
And Reeves, I don't think he should be playing right now, and I don't know why he had ice time there in the third period.
Yeah.
When they needed to have goal scorers out. But I just don't know, like, I just don't understand any of their adjustments. And I just think it's, like I said, I haven't really watched this team much this year, the Maple Leafs, but from what I'm watching, it just seems like the exact same stuff last year. And they were a great team all regular season, and I understand why fans maybe were more hyped this year than in years past because they finally won a round. And, I think, they beat Tampa, which was their nemesis, which was also their nemesis. And now Boston seems to be their nemesis back again. But this was almost like, okay, they're going to play Boston. But a lot of fans thought they've shaken what they've had in those past seasons, like those playoff curses, like this would be different. Even though they lost to them four times this year, I know a lot of Leaf fans thought it would be different. But look, Boston, man, their goaltending is solid. They play as a team. Pastrnak and Marchand are still elite, and especially Pastrnak. They just got the job done. And they're just getting the job done. Like, it's just simple as that. Like, the Leafs aren't right now, and I think the only positive maybe you take this into this offseason, that it's not Dubas as the GM. Yeah. I think Brad Treliving, he's made lots of trades when he was with Calgary. Like, right. He's not afraid to shake it up. And he didn't shake it up too much. Well, he did, but he didn't shake it up too much in his first off season because he was kind of thrown into it. And obviously he wanted to, you know, respect the core a little bit. But I think, you know, this isn't going to be a Kyle Dubas off season.
Yeah.
I know we're already talking about the off season, but like, well, I think pre-living will try to, yeah.
I'm going to cut you off just for a second, just to interject. Even the broadcast in the score, in the corner, it said, instead of saying switching once the game was over, instead of saying Bruins lead 3-1, it said Bruins win series. So even the guy handling the graphics has like, they, it's pretty much like a done deal to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, like it's not done yet. It really isn't. I would love to, like, okay, listen, if Matthews doesn't come back, I think it's done. But,
yeah,
like, you know, the last game is the hardest to get, and people forget. I believe the Bruins were up 3-1 last year on the Panthers and blew it in the first round.
Yep.
So now, obviously, they've learned from that now. So I don't know, take it as you will, but it isn't over. But all I'm going to say is that, you know, if it is over, I don't think Tree Living is going to stand pat and just make minor changes like what Dubas used to do. I think he will be aggressive. I think you're going to probably see Marner or Tavares gone. And yeah, I think he'll shake it up a bit. I don't think Nylander and Matthews are going anywhere. Nylander, I thought, played well for being thrown back into it after a concussion. Right. You can't really ask for much from the guy, but he was trying, man. He's turned in, like, 5 years ago, this is how people used to talk about Nylander, how they're talking about Marner. But right. Nylander is really done a 180.
He has shown himself to be
Everybody wanted Nylander shipped out of town for like a package of defensemen. Now it's like people want Marner shipped out of town for a package of pucks.
Exactly. So I was thinking about it. We can start going on to the off season. Might as well. It's either that or me moping more about how depressing this team is to watch. So let's just go on to the off season. Yeah, I was thinking about it. Would it be possible? Now this is kind of a crazy theory, but would it be like, you don't want to sell stocks when they're low, right? Like the saying is in the biz. Yeah. You buy low and you sell high, right? You sell high.
Yeah.
So could it be that we see a mirage season next year where they appear to be trying to win again, but with the idea that people will be traded, like i.e. Marner or Tavares? I don't really see Tavares being traded, though. Marner would be the big one, just because his contract is coming up.
The thing is, okay, you could get more of a haul for Marner, for sure, because he, at the end of the day, he's a star player in this league, and you could probably trade him to a team with a lot of cap space. But the thing with Tavares is, he would be, if you're trading Tavares, it's more likely going to be you're going to have to attach some draft picks to him, and you know, it'd be more of a salary dump, like just to have that $11 million freed up.
I think what I think is, if he has any injuries whatsoever, any, just let him get surgery. Hopefully it takes about like 9 months.
You talking about Marner?
I'm talking about Tavares here. Marner, there are options with Marner. Maybe you could get Tavares into some sort of long-term cap relief situation, LTIR, until he comes back.
Well, Tavares is still going to want to play.
Yeah.
And I know trading a captain might be, you know, a big shakeup, but I think maybe you just got to give the C to Matthews, and he's the guy that it will not be moved. I mean, he's scored 69 goals this year.
I always thought it should be Riley. But Matthews is...
You know, the thing is, what people don't... A lot of people say that, the Riley thing, but the thing is, what people don't understand is who has the most microphones in front of his face, win or lose,
right,
after a game? It's Austin Matthews, and that's why he needs the seat.
Yeah, fair enough.
The only thing I'd say about the Leafs and trades, potentially, I think if there are trades, it'll be hard to make them during the season. Like, if you're saying to go into the season with the same core, if it's going to happen, it'll be in the offseason. Like, the trades will be in the offseason. But, I mean, yeah. And then the thing is, you got to, like, when you're making trades, though, you got to make sure you're getting things back that, you know, that you need. You know, defensemen, you know, secondary goal scorers, core, bottom six forwards, stuff like that. Because, you know, you don't just want to, I mean, you obviously, you want to trade them to get rid of the cap relief, but, sorry, but, you know, that's not all, right? Trading them just for the sake of trading them is one thing, right? But you want to make sure you're getting something back that you're actually using. I don't know, hypothetical, right? Like, let's say the Jets right now, Connor Hellebuyck was like the best goalie all season.
Right.
Let's say Hellebuyck, you know, he seems like to be having a horrible playoffs. Let's say Hellebuyck wants a fresh start somewhere. This is just a huge hypothetical. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But like a Marner for Hellebuyck type of deal. Like, that's something that I think Leaf fans will entertain. But
no. No.
Other than that, like,
you can't do that. You can't, because you need, you're going to have to take 80 cents on the dollar, but what you need are more pieces, because the problem with this team is that it's too top heavy.
Yeah. But also, the cap is expected to rise considerably starting this summer for the next 5 years. But then, you know, obviously you can't wait that time, right? Like, every year gets shorter.
Yeah, you're burning through their peak years.
Yeah. You have to do something this offseason. You have to. And I think you got to make a decision on who you're trading, and you got to fire the coach and hire a new coach.
Yeah. Oh, no, the coach has to go.
That's my opinion.
He gets out-coached all the time.
Yeah.
And the power play is terrible. And you're talking about how
like, it's just saying the head coach.
Yeah, exactly. You need a whole new staff. It's like you're saying this is top level talent that's worth taking like huge cuts of your salary cap from, but they can't score a goal when they have an advantage. Like, literally, that's what it is. Like, you have the best players on your team, and they get a chance to score a goal with an advantage of one extra player, and they can't do it. They haven't, like, they've had a, I don't have the stat in front of me, but it's been just terrible, dismal.
Yeah, the power play is an issue. It's a huge issue. Like, if there's no way it could be, like, it should be that bad. I don't know, they did some, like, they were doing some weird things yesterday on that.
Yeah, they tried to.
When they were up 4-on-3, when they had Matthews playing the point, like, I don't know, I thought he should have been playing along the boards a bit more, because the way Tavares wins a draw, like, that's where it's going to go if he wins a draw cleanly, and nobody's there to retrieve the puck.
Right.
And I just thought the Leafs were just, first of all, like, it's crazy, because the Leafs were actually better on draws yesterday.
They
were the better team on the draws, and they had all these power plays, and they couldn't do anything with it, and they were winning the faceoffs.
Yeah.
But they just couldn't, like that's like they, it's like they didn't know what to do after. So I just think that's assistant coaching as well, right? So you got to fire everybody. Honestly, I don't even know what else they are where they are.
That's right, yeah. You got anything else? Well, I'll say that, like, last night I was speaking to Richard P. earlier, and he was we were talking about spirals, and he was talking about a virtuous spiral, But after that loss, I went down a spiral of despair. But after this morning, after resting up a bit, having this talk, getting a message on the phone that's positive, I think there's hope. So I just want to tell all the Leafs fans there out there, it gets better. It gets better. Hashtag it gets better. If anyone still uses hashtags.
Here's what I said to my Leaf friend fans last night.
Yeah.
With this payroll and these amount of players, you need to enter the playoffs with home ice advantage.
Yeah.
You cannot
it's crazy.
Be the third seed anymore. It just can't happen anymore.
Yeah.
You've got to be, you've got to win the division, play one of these, you know, wild card teams, or like a Washington or something, get that done in five, and then, you know what, the second round, you know, you take it from there. Every year the Leafs make the playoffs, they're winning, they're in second or third, they don't have home, this year, no home ice advantage against Boston, like, you're just setting it up for failure. Like, if they had home ice advantage, maybe it would be a little different, but the Leafs haven't won a home playoff now. Since the first round
that's
from
right.
last year.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's like getting ridiculous.
Yeah. It's really sad, man. But, I mean, I don't want to get into justifications and everything, but the so-called division, these divisions that are created by the NHL are completely unfair. They at least have just a juggernaut of a division. While in the West, there's like these, or like the, what's it, the Metropolitan League or Metropolitan Division? What a trash. Like half those teams suck.
Well, you know, I think they
I
should
shouldn't
go
say suck. That was too harsh. I'm sorry. They're like kind of mid. But yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. I agree with you that the way they do their playoffs and divisions are kind of weird, but. It used to be 1-8, 2-7, like topic in the conference. The Leafs still would have played Boston,
that's
and they
right.
still wouldn't have had home ice.
Yeah, that's thank you.
So,
yeah, you're right.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It at the end of the day, like I feel like you're going to play the teams you're going to play, and to make the Leafs' case, like their division had a lot of weak teams in it this year. Like you look at teams like. You know, Buffalo, Ottawa, Montreal.
Yeah, that's true.
They were just beat up on, you know what I mean? So, and that's why all these, you know, teams got all these wins and stuff. And Detroit made a little push, but they didn't do much. But, you know, they could have been, you know. I just think at the end of the day, like, I do think this playoff format is stupid, but it also, like, then you look at it, okay, they would have played Boston anyways. Like, you just got to beat this team. You know what I mean? Like, you just got to find a way to beat them.
Yeah.
Like, they play playoff hockey, you got to find a way to play playoff hockey and beat them.
Agreed. One last thing. They have this ad on TV for some company. I can't remember which one. Let's not say it because we're not giving them free ad time. But it's about how the Canadian teams suck. And now we should just cheer for each other's teams. Like, I just want to give that a no way dog. Just like, that's not happening. And I think also, when in my Leafs depression today, I started watching that All or Nothing thing on Amazon Prime. And it reminded me about this, the North Division. Maybe they should bring that back so that we get that idea of all being cheering for Canadian teams together out of our minds, which is just, it kind of grosses me out.
Yeah, I like that. I like the hate, you know what
I
mean?
Exactly.
Like, I like the rivalries and stuff. Like that's what it's like English soccer, right?
Exactly.
Like five teams in London, but they all have different allegiances.
Yeah.
So I like the Canadian division just because, you played more Canadian teams more often, and you know the rivalries built like it was better built rivalries. I know logistically it doesn't make a lot of sense because you don't want to be, you know, time zones and all that. But hey, you know, that was the only time we were able to get a Leafs-Habs playoff series
when
we had that.
Yeah, and so, like when I should research that, but when would, like, just hypothetically again, when would the Leafs match up with the Habs in a playoff series? Like, how have they set it up? Obviously, they wouldn't be playing in the final.
No, they would have to play each other in the first two rounds.
Right.
So it would. The thing is, the Habs have been pretty trash the last.
Yeah.
Other than that year, had that all Canadian division, and they caught lightning in a bottle and went to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah.
They've been pretty trash the last like 5 years or so years, and that's when they've been good, right? Yeah. So the Leafs have been in the playoffs, haven't.
Let's just say good with have been good with like air quotes around that.
Yeah, they've been making the playoffs. Like if the Habs could, you know, start potentially, you know, having a run, which I think next year they'll compete for the wild card spot. You know, if they do that and then the Leafs win the division, there's a chance they meet in the playoffs again. But the way the NHL has it set up, it's you play your division rivals for the first two rounds pretty much.
Yeah.
And then the conference final is whoever's left from the conference. Most of the time it's in a metropolitan team and an Atlantic team. And then obviously you go on to the Stanley Cup final to play a Western Conference team. It's not horrible, but it's going back to 1v8, I think would be okay. In my opinion, if you really want to get like the longer answer that I have that I would like to see happen is the NHL, now that they're at 32 teams, they go to divisions of four.
Yeah.
Like the NFL.
Right.
And then you have like, it's just Toronto, Ottawa, whatever, Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, and let's say Buffalo in the division. And then, you know, you win your division and you're guaranteed a playoff spot, but it's top eight who make it.
And then there's, you know, wild cards.
Well, yeah. So top eight in the conference make it, but the top four teams, like teams who win their division, are guaranteed a spot in that top eight.
Right.
Well, at least, but anyways, I just think that would also, you know, you would have more games against the Canadians, against the Senators, and like games that, you know, rivalries are sparked on and stuff like that. Because, you know, during the regular season, like, you know, if you're only playing I think you got to play, like, the Habs and Leafs should play each other at least six times a year. Like, you know, I think if you're playing, like, you know, teams that, you know, you might not have much, like, have a rivalry with, like, those midwinter games, they kind of, like, don't mean much, and it's hard to get, like, fired up for them, right?
So, yeah.
But, I mean, this is how it is. We got 32 teams now. It's going to stay like this. The league believes in this method. That has nothing to do with the reason why the Leafs aren't advancing. And that's, you know, true. What I mean?
Like, I agree.
It's just, they got to find a way.
They got to find a way. That's a great way to end this discussion. Thank you so much for jumping on with such a short notice. But I felt it was an emergency. I needed to be Tuesday, talked to. Yeah.
Tuesday. Back to Boston. Try to enjoy it. Hopefully they come out with a bit more effort.
Yeah.
And maybe they could win a game and bring it back to Toronto on Thursday. But that's another thing too about this series. It's like they're getting a lot of off in between. Like, most series, you know, you play the next, you know, rest and play. But, you know, they're getting like 2 days off. So if these guys are hurt, like,
yeah, they should be able to make. I wish McMahon was playing.
Yeah,
that guy's like, he. I wish he was here. He, that guy, Bobby McMahon, or, but yeah, I think it's Bobby McMahon. Anyways, that's something like that. Yeah, they do get a lot of rest. Yeah,
That's why. They should be, you know, using that to, right, like, rest up and come back and play hard.
So. Yeah. Well, I hope they come back rested Tuesday. I'm gonna just try. Maybe I'll just watch it or listen to it from the radio or something. Like, just like, Or maybe I'll go, like, see a play or something, or a movie, instead of watching and then check the score afterwards. Because I don't know if my, like, mental health, I can watch this game. Especially if they play like they played on Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, thank you very much.
No problem, man.
Have a good day.
Good luck.
Thanks.